Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Bamidbar. We're in May, and now would be a great time to reserve your spot for the Executive Learning Seminar at Pardes at the very end of June here in Jerusalem. It will be, as usual, a fantastic time, suitable for all ages, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and up. And you can learn more from our website, Pardes, P-A-R-D-E-S dot O-R-G dot I-L slash executive. Please check it out. And even better, please decide to come. You will have a superb time. This week, Bamidbar with Neiman Novetzky. Neiman Novetzky is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Neiman Novetzky.
Thank you, Larry. I want to start with a question. What does it mean to be chosen, to be singled out to perform a specific task, and as a result, to some extent at least, to be viewed as more special, more important than others? The concept of chosenness, I think, is not particularly PC, and many are uncomfortable with the notion, but it's hard to deny that the Torah does seem to set aside certain groups as exactly that. From the notion of us being an Am Segula, God's special nation, to the fact that even within our nation, we seem to have a hierarchy of Kohanim, of priests, and Leviim, and Levites. It seems that this notion of chosenness is deeply embedded in our tradition. It is the latter section, the section that deals with Leviim and Kohanim, that I want to speak about, as it comes up in this week's parsha. Most of Bamidbar revolves around the various preparations that the nation took before the planned conquest. It includes a series of censuses, the setup of the camp, and related matters. One of those censuses discusses the replacing of the firstborns, who had previously held some sort of special status, with the Levites, who were to take on that same holy status from now on. Hashem tells Moshe, "Ani hinei lakachti televiyim mitoch b'nei Yisrael, tachar kol b'chor petarechem mibnei Yisrael, v'hayuli ha-leviyim." Hashem tells Moshe that he's going to take the Levites from amongst Bnei Israel instead of the firstborns of Bnei Israel. Ki li kol b'chor b'yom hakoti kol b'chor b'Yisrael, hiktash li kol b'chor b'Yisrael me'adam ad behema, li yiyu ani Hashem. And Hashem says, when had I chosen the firstborns to begin with? When he had smote all of the firstborns in Egypt, on that day he had sanctified the firstborns. But now it seems that they are being rejected and replaced by the Levites. The verses, of course, don't adequately explain why the firstborns were originally chosen. It just tells us when. Nor does it explain why they are now being replaced. But perhaps most fundamentally, going back to my original question, the verses raises this whole question of chosenness, but don't explain what it means to be chosen anyway. Why is it that there are certain groups that are picked out for special status, that are viewed as holy? In the words of Korach, when he rebels later on in Sefer Bamidbar, isn't it true that kol ha'idah kulam kidoshim ubetocham Hashem, the entire nation are all holy and amongst them is God? If so, why is it that we have a system with a hierarchy of Kohanim, Leviim, and then poor old Yisrael? In the next bunch of minutes, I'd like to explore several understandings of the choosing and rejecting of the firstborns and why they were replaced with the Levites, and hopefully, in so doing, present three different models of what it means to be chosen. The choosing of the firstborn is first mentioned back in Shemot, after Makat Bacharot, after the plague of the firstborns. The verses read, "Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lemor." Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, "Kadesh li kol b'chor peter kol rechem b'bnei Yisrael. Sanctify unto me the firstborn of all wombs of Bnei Yisrael, ba'adam u'bahmima, both man and animal." The verses continue and say that if your children in the future should ask you why, Amarte Elav, you should answer them, Bechozik Yad Hotianu Hashem Mitzrayim Mibeit Avadim. With a strong hand, God took us out of Egypt, out of the house of slaves. Vayhi ki iksha Paro l'shalchinu, and when Paro hardened his heart against sending us, Vayharol Hashem kol b'chor be'aretz Mitzrayim, God then smote all of the firstborns in Egypt, mi b'chor adam v'ad b'chor behema, from the firstborn of the animals, of the humans to the firstborn of the animals, This is why there is extra sanctity to all of the firstborns. According to these verses, it seems that there's a direct correlation with the saving of the firstborns during the plague of firstborns, when all the Egyptian firstborns were killed, yet all the Israelites were saved, and they're being chosen originally. One must, of course, ask, what were they chosen for? And the Gemara in Zvachim points out, and it seems to be related to our parak as well, Ad shelo hukam ha-mishkan hayu ha-bamot mutarot va-avodah ba-bachorim. Until the establishment of the Mishkan, bamot, bringing sacrifices on high places, was allowed, and this worship was done by the Bechorim, by the firstborns. It sounds like when God sanctifies the firstborns back in Sefer Shemot, he's sanctifying them for a specific purpose, and that is that they should serve God by giving him korbanot, that they were the ones who take the role that perhaps later is taken by the Kohanim and Levim in the Mikdash, in our chapter, what the Levim take over from them, but that it has to do with serving God, being the ones who actually perhaps offered up the korbanot. So originally it sounds like this was a job that was given to the firstborns, and one has the question, so why were they chosen? As we said, it seems to be intricately connected to their being saved, which I think raises an important question as to whether chosenness is a privilege or an obligation. These verses, I think, would suggest the latter. This isn't a privilege, a reward. They were rewarded by being saved. Rather, it's an obligation. Because they were saved, they now have to do something in return for God. Their serving of God is not something that we should be viewing as, oh, they get special pick to be able to do something that we all want to do, but rather, this is something that they have to do, that they are obligated to do in return for them having been saved. This is some kind of a payback to God. You saved me, now I must do something back to you, I must serve you, I must take on extra special tasks in order to give back. We must ask then, well, why were the firstborns later rejected? Why did they lose out and have a different person, a different group of people, take on their tasks? Rashi and Ibn Ezra offer the most well-known explanation for the choosing of the Levites and rejection of the firstborns. Rashi suggests that even though in Sefer Bamidbar it is here where we see the switch actually happened beforehand. B'shana ha-rishona letzitchem mimitzrayim, ta'item be'ega, u'b'nei Levi loto, hevdilam ha-makom mikem. Rashi says, in the first year when we came out of Egypt, and B'nai Israel sinned with the sin of the golden calf, that's when the switch between firstborns and Levites took place. The Levites had not been participating in the sin of the golden calf, and thus they merited to then take over the task of the firstborns. Ibn Ezra elaborates a little bit to point out what role had the firstborns played in the sin. And he says, דבר גדול היה ומאחיס לאשר איננו מאמין להסיר הבכורים מכהונתם ולהשיב המעלה למשפחת משה לבדו. He says, it could have been seen as something very angering that the task of the firstborns was removed from them and given over to people from the members of Moshe's family, fellow Levites. He says, וכל זה היה בעבור מעשה העגל. All this, though, was due to the actions of the egel. כי ויעלו עולות ויקשו שלמים, because in that story, when it talks about the bringing of sacrifices to the calf, habechorim he'alum, ki heim hayu levadam hakohanim. In that story, it was dafka the bechorim, it was specifically the firstborns who were active in bringing the sacrifices, because until then, they had been the ones who had served as priests. Ubnei Levi hargu avdei ha'egel, whereas the Levites were the ones who killed those who worshipped the egel, who worshipped the golden calf. So between Rashi and Ibn Ezra, we can piece together God's thinking. In the story of the golden calf, the firstborns were the ones most culpable. Them, having the role of priests from the time that they left Egypt, took that role upon themselves, not just to serve God, but to serve the golden calf. This alone served to reject them from later serving God in the special role of Kohanim, or firstborns, until then. Who then should be the ones to replace them? Come Rashi and Ibn Ezra say, of course, it should have been the Levites because they were the ones who did not participate in the golden calf. This view of chosenness, of the reason that the Levites come to be those that get the special task of serving in the Mikdash and serving in the Mishkan, views chosenness as not an obligation, but a privilege, a reward. They merited to become the ones who should go and serve in the Mishkan, as opposed to the firstborns who did not merit it. Rashi and Ibn Ezra would probably suggest chosenness is a privilege. It's something you get because you deserve it as a reward for doing something extra special. Others agree with the same model of chosenness, but not with the same reasoning of why the Levites merited to be the ones to serve. Jubilees suggests that it happened way before the sin of the golden calf. Jubilees reads, "For this reason I have commanded thee, saying, testify this testimony to Israel. See how the Shechemites fared and their sons, how they were delivered into the hands of two sons of Jacob, and they slew them under tortures. And it was reckoned unto them for righteousness, and it is written down to them for righteousness." Jubilees, in retelling the story of the rape of Dinah and Shechem and the actions of Shimon and Levi to obliterate the city of Shechem, views the actions of Shimon and Levi in a very, very positive light. One might question the entire story and how to read their actions. That would be an entirely different lecture. But for our purposes, important to note, Jubilees reads them as being extremely meritorious for their actions and says that their actions were written down for them for righteousness. Not only that, they continue, and the seed of Levi was chosen for the priesthood and to be Levites that they might minister before the Lord. As we continually, and that Levi and his sons may be blessed forever, for he was zealous to execute righteousness and judgment and vengeance on all those who rose against Israel. According to Jubilees, it was in the aftermath of the destruction of Shechem when Shimon and Levi came to, in their words, execute righteousness and judgment and vengeance on all, that the tribe of Levi was rewarded that they should be ministers before Hashem, before God. So Jubilees, like Rashi and Ibn Ezra says, chosenness is a reward. It's a privilege. It's something that you merited because of an action and then are rewarded for in its aftermath. Unlike Rashi and Ibn Ezra that connect the action that they're being rewarded for to the sin of the golden calf, Jubilees suggests this happened way beforehand. Already from the time of the initial tribes of Shimon and Levi, Levi was chosen due to their zealous actions. So both of these opinions focus on the concept of merit or reward. Not all, though, do. Rambam suggests a different understanding of when Shevet Levi was chosen and why. In his Hachot Avodat Kochavim, in his discussing of the laws of idolatry, the Rambam traces the path that people came to believe in God and the path in which that belief was transmitted from one generation to another. He tells us, "Hitzchil Avraham la'amod v'dekro b'kol gadol l'chol ha'olam." He says, after Avraham recognized God, he stood up and he cried out in a great voice to the entire world, "L'hodi'am she'yesham Eloha achad," to teach them that there is just one God. "V'hodi'o li Yitzchak b'no, v'yeshev Yitzchak m'lamedu matir, v'yitzchak hodi'o li Yaakov." And he points out how there was a line of transmission. After Avram came to recognize God, he passed on that information to his son Yitzchak. Yitzchak sat down and learned, and he passed on that information and that belief system to Yaakov. "Uminyahu lilamid v'yashav milamid," and he told him, "You go and teach and you go and spread the word." "V'yaakov avinu limid banav kulam." Yaakov then transmitted this message, not just to one son, but to all of his sons. "V'hivdil Levi uminahu rosh," but he separated Levi out and he appointed him ahead. "V'hoshivo v'yeshiva l'lamid derech Hashem v'lishmor mitzvot Avraham," and he sat him up in a yeshiva, in some type of a learning site, in order to continue to learn and to keep the mitzvot and to spread it. "V'tziva banav shelo yafsiku mibnei Levi mimuneh achad mimuneh kedei shelo tishkach halimun," and he made sure to tell them that they should never have someone stop from the tribe of Levi to be appointed to continue this learning, so that it wouldn't be forgotten. And this learning spread until they were a full nation of people who knew God. Until they went down to Egypt, where unfortunately they learned from their neighbors and started to veer away from the correct path, but to worship idolatry. With the exception of Shevet Levi, who continued on the right path and continued to teach everybody the correct path. Now, Rambam doesn't address our question of what chosenness means directly, but he does suggest that Shevet Levi was chosen way before the story of Chet Ha'egel, the story of the golden calf, way before Parshat Bamidbar. Already, when Yaakov was raising his own children, he set aside Shevet Levi to be the ones who teach. He didn't set him aside in being the only one to believe, unlike Avraham and Yitzchak, who each chose one son, Yitzchak as opposed to Yishmael. Yitzchak chooses Yaakov instead of Esav. Yaakov chooses all of his sons to follow in the path of Hashem, but he's picked out one specifically to be the one who teaches Torah and who spends their time learning and spreading that Torah. And even though the Rambam doesn't say it explicitly, one would probably question, well, why did Yaakov choose that son as opposed to any other son? And I think the logical response would probably be, somehow he recognized that Levi, perhaps, was better suited to this than anybody else. He had 12 distant sons, presumably each one with their own strengths and their own weaknesses. And he looked and he said, which one is the one who's best suited for learning Torah? And came up with Levi. And I think this is another way of viewing the concept of chosenness. Not as a privilege, nor as an obligation, but perhaps the concept that different people are chosen to do different tasks simply for the reason that they are best suited for those tasks. That they happen to be the right person or the right group of people to do whatever it is that we are assigning them to do. For whatever reasons, perhaps specifically because of the zealousness of Levi, perhaps because of their closeness to God that perhaps was somehow inherent in the person Levi, Yaakov chooses him to be the one to continue to teach Torah, and later this becomes the group of people who are picked to serve God in the Mishkan. Rav Yosef Gochorshor goes in a similar direction, but doesn't use it to explain why one group is accepted, but rather to explain why one group is rejected. Because according to this approach, one has to question, well, why was the Bechorim, why were the firstborns rejected? So Rav Yosef Gochorshor says, Nireh shelifnei oto ma'aseh hibadlu. He too agrees, this has nothing to do with Chet Ha'egel, it has nothing to do with the sin of the golden calf, but rather, he says, lefi ha'pshat, says it seems, according to the simple sense, that someone who is going to be serving in the Mishkan or leader in the Mikdash, they're not going to be getting an inheritance, meaning an inheritance of land. And he says this is a practical thing. If someone's going to have to spend their entire time in the worship of God and doing things that have to do with learning Torah and working in the Mishkan and things like that, they simply won't have time to work the land, and so they don't get an inheritance of land. He says, but we know the law is that the firstborns got a double portion of their inheritance. And that's why God appointed the Levites in their place, and told them that they're not going to get a land inheritance. So Rav Yosef Gochorshor says, there's actually a very practical reason that the Levites replaced the firstborns. While the firstborns were in the desert, they were a totally fine option for a group that's going to serve God. For that time period, when they left Mitzrayim, until they were going to come into the land, they could do just as good a job as anybody, and for whatever reasons, perhaps because of their original obligation post the slaying of the firstborns, they were the ones chosen. Rav Yosef Gochorshor suggests, though, God realized that this is perhaps not the most practical of choices for when we actually go into the lands. The firstborns have a double inheritance. They're going to be getting double a portion of the land than everybody else, which means that they're going to be having to spend a lot of time dealing with their land, planting and doing all the other agricultural concerns that they're going to have to deal with, which will make them not the best option for someone who's supposed to be serving God. So Hashem says, Let's reject them and replace them with someone else. So Rav Yosef Rochoshua, like the Rambam, suggests sometimes you're chosen or rejected from a task because you're just not, you're either suited or you're not suited for it. When the Bechorim, when the firstborns were going to get into Israel, they were not going to be the best suited for serving in the Mikdash. Having a double portion of land means that their minds were going to be busy elsewhere. Their hands were going to be busy doing other things. And so God says we have to take it away from them. So to summarize, I think what we saw was three different models of chosenness. One is a model that chosenness is an obligation. This is not a reward for having done something special, but rather payback for having received something in the past. Sometimes having been given something obligates me to do back, and in this case, when the firstborns were originally chosen, perhaps their chosenness was because they had been saved. They now had to do something extra special back to God. A second model of chosenness is that of privilege. Being chosen is a reward for having done something special in the past. You merited being chosen, either in this case because the Levites did not participate in the sin of the golden calf, according to Jubilees, for their role in the destruction of Shechem, or for whatever other reason one might say. The Levites somehow did something special. As a reward, they get to be someone special, get closer to God in the Mishkan. The third model is that it's neither a reward nor is it an obligation, but rather it is a person who is best suited to a task. Being chosen doesn't make you more special or less special than anybody else. It means that you happen to be the best person for this job. You will be chosen for this. Somebody else will likely be chosen for something else. I want to end with just a question for thought, and that is a bunch of what ifs. I think the entire discussion of replacing the firstborns with the Levites raises questions as to, well, what were the other possible scenarios? And I think there were probably three. We started the question with, do we need a hierarchy at all? Perhaps one model would have been, don't choose the firstborns, don't choose the Levites. Let everyone be able to serve. As we said, Korach raises, Kol ha'edah kulam kedoshim. Is it not possible to have an entire nation of chosen people, everyone being allowed to bring their own korbanot without the need for any intermediary, any other one with a special status? That would have been one possibility. And I think it's interesting to question, how would society have looked if that was the possibility that we took up? If Hashem had said, everybody could bring, anybody who wants can be a Kohen, can be a Levi, what would society have looked like? Does one really need hierarchy, especially in the realm of spirituality or religion? Second possibility is a possibility that we had for a short term in the Midbar in the desert with the choosing of the firstborns. How would society look if instead of having everybody be able and equal in their religious obligations, or on the other hand, like later is the model, having one special tribe, what would society have looked like if in every family there was one special person? In every family, there was your Kohen in the form of the firstborn. Would that have been a good model to follow? Would it have been good for the family? On one level, one says, well, it's really nice that every family can feel special. That every family has someone who they say, oh, look, we have someone in the Mishkan. We have someone working in the Mikdash. On the other hand, one wonders, what would that do to the internal family dynamic? If there was not enough jealousy of the firstborn, does this not increase it even more? And what about the final model that we have, that of an entire tribe being singled out and being different from the rest of the tribes? On one level, we all know the need for hierarchy in general, in a government, in an institution, that somebody has to be higher up than someone else for organizational purposes, etc. But does it have to be an entire tribe, all from one? Is that good or bad? How does it make that tribe be viewed? Are they listened to more, maybe, because they're an outsider and not an insider? So I leave you those questions to ponder, all those what-ifs. What would be the difference if we didn't have a chosen tribe, a chosen group, and we were all equal? And what if there was a different chosen group? With that, I wish you all a Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you, Neema. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.